recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win, like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studio, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. Now, it's a monumental day for Nashville Predators fans, for the city of Nashville, for the state of Tennessee tomorrow, as Pecorine's statue will be revealed at Bridgestone Arena. Now, this is the first ever statue of a professional athlete in the state of Tennessee. And joining us now is Scott Wise, who constructed Pecorine's statue. Now, Scott, you have had the opportunity to create some really special statues and works of art. You're a Clarksville native. You were able to honor your hometown of Clarksville after the tornado in 1999. You are a firefighter, and you got to construct a statue to honor some of the fallen firefighters in the state of Tennessee. And now you are tasked to create a statue of Pecorine. What did this project mean to you, considering you have so many very emotional statues and works of art in your repertoire?
Oh, it's huge. Huge. It's because I'm a huge Predators fan since day one. So, and especially with it being Pekka, because he's such a humble guy and everybody just loves Pekka and all the things that he's done for the community and for keeping, you know, in my opinion, sort of kind of keeping the hockey club in Nashville. And as a fan base, I just hope that, you know, everyone likes it as much as I enjoyed building it.
Walk us through the process from the very beginning until now. Tomorrow it'll be unveiled. What has that process been like from the very beginning until now?
Well, you know, they're building a new arena here in Clarksville, the F&M Arena, or F&M Bank Arena. And being a Preds fan, I wanted to have the possibility of, you know, some artwork outside. And then I got to thinking, well, there's really not, I mean, there's things out in front of the Bridgestone, but I thought it'd be great to have, you know, some artwork. I didn't really know what kind. So anyway, I had sent an email through the ranks of the Preds organization probably 2 years ago now. And, not that it fell on deaf ears or anything, but they just didn't have any plans of doing anything like that. And just over a year ago, I got in contact with me, and they decided that once Pekka had retired, that that was something that they wanted to do. So we started through the process of, you know, poses and different things like that. And then I do what I do as far as the sculpting of the clay and, you know, then going through those processes of going through making the pose that they wanted. And then it goes to a foundry. It's, you know, it goes in clay and then it goes into bronze and now it's finished. But that took, you know, over a year.
We're talking with Clarksville native, excuse me, Scott Wise, who has been tasked to, sculpt out a massive sculpture, bronze statue of Pecorine, one of Nashville's Predators' famous players and arguably a guy that, while he was playing, he kept it all together for the Nashville Predators and helped them go on that run in 2017. But Scott, when you are tasked to do sculptures and statues like this, whether it be Pecorine, or, you know, you're erecting things for Clarksville and what they went through during tornadoes and memorializing fallen firefighters, as you are one yourself, how emotional is that for you?
Oh, it's, well, I'm a detailed person anyway, so it's it hits home, especially the firefighter pieces, and then being such a big fan of the Preds. It's really hard to explain, really. I want to make sure that they're right. Mm-hmm. So I'm so detailed about it. I live and breathe it, you know, until it's finished or until I'm satisfied, and then hopefully everyone else is.
So, Scott, how many people have seen it at this point? Like, we're all – I saw Pekka yesterday. He says he has not seen it. He said it on our broadcast. He hasn't seen it yet. So how many people besides you know, have seen the finished product?
The guys at the Foundry, the ones that actually cast the piece. So there's three or four of those guys, but that's up in Indianapolis, so they're a little bit out of the area. But within the area, I would say maybe I'm going to go with 3 to 4 people.
Wow.
I've only seen photographs. I am the only one that's seen it actually in person.
Wow, that is exciting. All right, so Scott, I can only imagine what this is like when you're about to show this to everybody tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. And it's open to the public. I hope a lot of people come. I know a lot of people are coming down there. So you also said you've been a day one fan of the team. So what about the emotions tomorrow of the moment where you unveil this thing? Plus, you got a pretty big game. I mean, if the Predators win this game, it's good things are happening. So what about the nervous level for both?
They're both extreme. Probably more of the unveiling for me. Like I said, I enjoyed it so much creating the piece that I just hope everybody else enjoys it just as much. And from now on, I mean, it's in bronze. It's going to be here.
It's going to be here. You know,
hopefully it pleases everyone.
You know, I know it's going to work out well, Scott. You are the right guy to do this. I love the backstory of you've been involved. It's perfect. Because you've been watching for so long. So I think everybody's just going to dive into this thing. I am curious. You said it, and this is, I'm sure, something that all artists, grapple with when they're putting this together. You said, look, I want this to look like Pekka, right? So how did you go when you were going through that process? What are some of the things you tried to do it that way?
Oh, portraiture is always the most difficult, especially with someone that's still alive. They're right there, so it has to be right. And with I'm trying to think, it's the end of February last year with the stadium series game. I had about an hour and a half with Pekka, and we took probably over 200 photographs all the way around him. So I worked from those four photographs, and the body, I got to use his gear. I mean, that, which was a great help. But when it came to the portraiture, I ended up cutting his head off and bringing it from the studio. I actually brought him home, and my stepdaughter is such a huge Pekka fan that I would have her come out, and my wife as well. They would come out into the little garage area where I was working on him. And when they were like, I don't think, when they came out that last time and said, oh, it looks just like Pekka, I said, all right, I'm stopping.
Okay, there you go. So you had good people around you that helped you do it. All right, before we let you go, you mentioned you've been a fan for a long time. What got you into Predators hockey? How'd you become a fan?
Oh, I used to love going to the Knights games.
Oh, wow.
Nights. So, yeah, it was back
I probably
in the day,
saw you at a game at some point there.
Yeah, you probably did. Yeah, it was. And I had family, in Chicago, actually, my uncles and stuff. And that was actually the first game I ever saw was a Blackhawks game. So, and when they came to Nashville, I was like, all right, it's on now. And I hope they stay from now on. So, and like I said, I've been there. I caught only one game that first season, but it got more and more every season. So,
awesome.
Really, it was just, like I said, the Knights.
The old Knights. That was the old Municipal Auditorium. And
yes, sir.
Who knew when I was in college going out to those games, like, someday we're going to have an NHL team here. I never would have thought that back then, but here we are.
I never would have either.
Back in the day. Scott Wise, Clarksville native, diehard Nashville Predators fan who is tasked with creating Pecorine's bronze statue that will be erected in front of Bridgestone Arena and unveiled tomorrow. Appreciate you for joining us, and enjoy the day tomorrow.
Thank you so much. Go Preds.
Coming up next, yeah, appreciate you for joining us. Coming up next, I want to get into just how massive of a day this really is for Predators fans, for the Nashville Predators franchise, for Pecorine. And plus, the Predators got a win last night, what that means for the playoff standings, all that coming up next. Caroline Willie DeMays, 1025, 1063, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game in the Game Nashville app. Appreciate Scott Wise for joining us in the last segment. Scott Wise is a Clarksville native, diehard Nashville Predators fan since day one, and he had been tasked with creating Pecorine's bronze statue, which will be revealed tomorrow when the Predators take on the Seattle Kraken at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday afternoon. And I'm new to Nashville. I've never claimed to have been here from the very beginning, but I have done everything that I could to, you know, read up on the beginnings of the Predators and the beginnings of the Titans and some of those teams and the history of the teams. And I can do as much research as I can, but it's not the same as actually being here and experiencing it in real time. But even just in my short time in Nashville, I've been here for 2 years, my very short time in Nashville and the one season that I was here for before Pecorine retired, even in just that short time, I realized and recognized just how important Pecorine is to this town, how important Pecorine is to this franchise and will continue to be to this franchise. And it was just in a short period of time. So I know the people that have been around since the late 90s, since the very beginning of the Nashville Predators organization, and then when Pecorine was brought into the Predators, just how much he means to this city. I felt it just in a few short months, and I know everyone who has been here from the beginning can feel it as well, and it's a special day for Pekka, and it's a special day for this franchise.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Pekka is such a one-of-a-kind guy. He rolled in yesterday to the rink, and the team didn't know he was there. He walked in. The broadcast crew were just sitting around waiting for the morning skate to end to do our pre-game interview chat with Coach Hines. And it was just unbelievable. As the players and coaches one by one came off the ice and saw him, how their eyes just lit up. I mean, it's amazing his effect on everybody around him. He's just one of those guys that he just has that energy around him, and he doesn't even try, right? He's just such a nice, easygoing guy. It just happens, right? So there's nobody that's at all envious or jealous or anything. Everybody just, this is what feels natural for this kind of day to happen tomorrow. And I couldn't help but think about UC Saros last night. Played really, really well. I mean, there's so little margin for error for this team right now with the guys that are hurt and are unavailable and where they are, but they keep scrapping. And UC Saros is keeping him in games. He was fantastic last night. I kept thinking, man, this must be fun for Juice, right, to look up there and say, okay, got another one there, because he's learned so much from Pecorine.
It must be so cool for Pekka to be up there watching UC Saros, you know, considering he was his mentor and they do have such a close relationship. How cool that must be for Pekka to be watching him be so successful for this team.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen him. And I guess the neat part about it is because this doesn't happen to players in no profession, really. A lot of professions, you see a lot of guys moving around from this team, to that team, and then they finally settle and whatever. But when you see a guy, it's sort of like Bruce Matthews. Like, Bruce was just a, and I bring his name up because we were talking O-line. It's like Bruce was a Oiler Titan through and through. It was just, he was drafted by the Oilers, ended his career with the Titans. Same owner, same organization in a sense. So he meant a lot because you were able to see his growth, and then you were able to see also the hard times he went through, the injuries, and how he continued to battle, and then ultimately he retires. It's same with Pekka. You saw him grow as a player, a young player, trying to figure it out, knew he had the potential. Into this guy that was considered a top three or four goalie in the league, like one of the best goalies in all of hockey, you know, helping your team on this amazing run in 2017. And then watch him, you know, have to pass the torch to UC Sorrel. You watch it. You watched all of it when he got the torch and when he passed it on. So you, it's just like, man, how can you not, you know, embrace what he's meant and what he's done and the type of person he is? Because through it all, he's been a professional through it all.
Yep, that's the thing. It just, he's just a guy you want to be around. So last year, the jersey hanging from the rafters, and then a year later, this. I mean, that's a lot for sure. So it's gonna be an emotional day tomorrow, and hopefully, once again, it'll inspire the team because it's another interesting test. They just trying to stay in the mix here, stay hanging around. They haven't gotten any help from Winnipeg here. They scrapped out a win last night. Winnipeg's got the easier schedule, as we talked about last night. If Nashville is going to creep a little closer, they've got to keep winning against good teams. They only play one game in their last 12 against a team that's completely out of the race. That's St. Louis. Everybody else that they play are either going to be in the playoffs or are very close and fighting for a playoff spot. Winnipeg has got an easier road, but they're still probably feeling the pressure. And every game Nashville can win and stay in it, they're going to apply more pressure. I think the Jets will feel more pressure, and I think I just admire that the Predators are still in the position they're in right now, because I envisioned this day about a month ago saying, be great for Pekka, but it's kind of a bummer that the team, like, I just thought the team would be way out of it by now, most likely. But the fact that this is a significant game is a feather in their cap.
Which is a totally rational way of thinking. Whenever you're at the trade deadline, you decide to trade away core players, players who have contributed for this team both this year and last, you'd think, okay, it's going to be the young guys. They're going to get some experience. It's not going to be the prettiest thing moving forward. But when you look at it from a macro perspective of the success of the team moving forward, moves that you had to make, it's just get over with this season, move on to next year, get some draft picks, so on and so forth.
Yeah. But with the injuries on top of it.
With the injuries.
Forsberg out, Carrier out, Johansson, Parsonen, and now Josi. That's even more improbable that they're 10-4-2 in their last 16. I mean, just a tremendous job by that group.
Predators get the win in overtime last night, 2-1 over Seattle. And taking that game to overtime isn't the best thing, considering the playoff picture right now where it is. It's a game of inches. And Seattle is kind of right on the edge of the bubble of a wild card spot. But another crack at it tomorrow, no pun intended,
nice.
With the Seattle Kraken tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. You know, the Flames lose last night. The Preds are moving ahead in the playoff picture. What does it mean, this game tomorrow? What does this game mean, considering it's going to be a gauntlet moving down the stretch in the schedule? You got Boston, Toronto, Pittsburgh.
The Kraken right now, if you look at them, and it's to their credit, they just have not flinched. They have overachieved, I think, more than really any team in the West, given this is the second year of their existence. They've done a great job. And so just hanging on and getting a point for them makes it tougher for the Predators to catch them, even though the Predators win the game. So I think, you know, for Nashville to have hopes of overtaking the Kraken, they really need a regulation win tomorrow to do that. So the Kraken, just to get a point, that helps their math. It keeps them with a decent cushion to hold on to one of the two wild card spots. So they're a little tougher to catch. The Jets are still the team mathematically. The Predators have played three less games. So the Jets still are catchable somewhere along the line. Nashville needs the Jets and or the Kraken to falter down the stretch. And Nashville's got to keep winning whenever they can. To sit there and say they're going to go 12-0, the Predators, they're not going to go 12-0. But if they can scratch out as many games, as many points as they can, if they can get to that 94-95 range, and one of those teams dips a little bit, you never know. But it's just one game at a time, right? Just keep going out there. Last night I was wondering, you know, they didn't have Roman Josi. But who kept it together? Ryan McDonough played an amazing game. He broke up 4, 5, 6 huge plays. The guts that he plays with, the way he rubs off on these young guys, it is really something. So it's not only great to stay in the race this year, but what kind of influence is he having on the younger guys like Fabreau and Tomasino, and those, I mean, it's just valuable stuff that they're gaining out of this.
Absolutely. And I think the Predators are in a very comfortable position now where every single game matters in terms of the playoff race and in terms of getting these guys experience. But overall, you can take it one day at a time because there are no expectations for this team. The expectations are, hey, if you can get to the playoffs, you can get to the postseason. You absolutely are exceeding expectations. If you don't, nobody expected it anyways, and you just move forward. But at this point, it's all about tests and learning lessons. And John Hines spoke on the difficult stretch that the Predators have moving forward and what the young guys can take away from it.
And I think when you look at even the upcoming schedule, you know, two with Seattle, at Boston, at Pittsburgh, you know, those are all heavyweight teams that are in the playoffs. You know, Pittsburgh's fighting for a playoff spot, but, you know, they're an elite team. That, you know, now the challenge is really going to come. How do we handle those style of games, those type of teams night in and night out? You know, we also have Toronto on Sunday. You know, so we have some heavyweights coming into play, and the style of game is going to be really, really demanding. And that's, you know, that's the challenge we have to face. We're going to try to help those guys through it. But, you know, I think that's where – you realize how hard the league is going to be, but I'm confident that these guys are going to be—they're going to be able to respond and handle it the right way.
Tough stretch, and it starts tomorrow against the Kraken in Game 2 of 2 in a homestand against Seattle.
You got to try not to look ahead, even though I mean it's a lot of hockey. This is the other thing that I looked at. Now, going into last night, they had 13 games left over the final 23 days. So now it'll be 12 games left in the final 21 days. So that's a lot of hockey. It's a lot of hockey. There's some back-to-backs in there. So the games in hand are good, but you're having to roll out there a bunch. You got to save that energy. Are they going to get any of these guys back? And if so, when? These are all things to consider in, you know, the improbable task that they're trying to do. But, again, the journey will have value for these young guys that are right in there. Who scores the game-ending goal last night in the shootout? Tomasino, right? It wasn't his best game. His line got neutralized pretty well. Duchesne, Tomasino, Glass. But Tomasino still was able to have something positive happen there. So that's a good thing. Dante Fabbro, I think, right now is playing his best hockey of the year. Who's he playing with? Ryan McDonagh. He's gaining huge, valuable experience playing with a guy like that. He's learning from him. So that could really turn his career in the right direction. They know they're going to have him next year. So that's what John Hines has been talking about, meaningful games. And you can tell there's a little bit of loose, they're the underdog. He knows that they're underdog. Let's see how these guys go with. They're playing with, like, nothing to lose. They're not feeling the pressure that maybe some of these other teams are playing. They're not feeling the pressure that the Predator guys, before the trade deadline, might have been feeling. There was a weight on that team's shoulders. They've played better since they kind of released that weight a little bit. So that's a positive.
Predators in action tomorrow against the Seattle Kraken. And, of course, it's Pecorine Day. Puck drop is at 1 o'clock. We'll have all the pregame coverage at noon on 102.5 The Game. But head down to Bridgestone Arena tomorrow if you're able to watch the unveiling of Pecorine's statue. Coming up next, one of the biggest NFL offseason storylines just got a whole lot more bizarre. And we will explain coming up next. And, of course, your phone call 615-737-1025. Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5-106.3 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. So I think one of the biggest offseason storylines, and all of the biggest offseason storylines, revolve around the quarterbacks, which is to be expected. One of the biggest storylines is Aaron Rodgers, which is to be expected where his next landing spot will be. But ever since the Baltimore Ravens placed a non-exclusive franchise tag on Lamar Jackson, and Lamar Jackson got free rein to go test the market and see what other teams were out there, what they would be willing to pay Lamar Jackson, that has become the biggest story. I feel like every morning I turn on Get Up or First Take or SportsCenter, that's usually the topic of conversation is, where's Lamar Jackson going to be? You know, who is going to be offering Lamar Jackson? Or if Lamar Jackson doesn't get offers, then what happens next? It's all fair discussions to have. Lamar Jackson is one of the top quarterbacks in the league, and if he doesn't have a landing spot, where his landing spot will be is going to be the topic of discussion. I'm still under the belief that he's going to be in Baltimore next year. I think that's at least how I feel. But there were some rumblings coming out that there was a representative for Lamar Jackson. Remember, Lamar Jackson does not have real representation. He's not have an agent. But there was a representative on behalf of Lamar Jackson that was calling around teams around the league, you know, just kind of dipping their toes in the water, seeing what they would offer, having those conversations. And then this memo came out from the league yesterday afternoon. I believe Adam Schefter was the first one to report it. It's a memo from the NFL Management Council. It says, the NFLPA has been informed that a person by the name of Ken Francis, who is not an NFLPA certified agent, may be contacting clubs and attempting to persuade club personnel to enter into negotiations with or concerning Lamar Jackson, who is currently under a non-exclusive franchise tender with the Baltimore Ravens. What a friend, I have to say. You have a friend picking up the phone and saying, hey, you really should be in the Lamar Jackson sweepstakes. Basically, this memo from the NFLPA says, remember, any certified agent, so to speak, under the NFLPA cannot negotiate with NFL teams. And any NFL team that has done negotiating with this person, Ken Francis, who I'm assuming is a buddy of Lamar Jackson, if they decide to put an offer out for Lamar Jackson, that offer will be void. I just think this is such a bizarre turn of events with the Lamar Jackson sweepstakes. I don't know if this has ever happened. I don't remember any time in the history of the NFL of some just random guy picking up the phone and calling NFL clubs, but I think it's a bad look for the negotiations for Lamar Jackson.
I'm reminded of the saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. He can call every team if he wants to and say, hey, this is out there. You think the teams don't know that Lamar Jackson's out there?
They know.
They know.
Everyone knows.
They know what it would take to get him. They know what they're willing to pay, and the phone's really not ringing. So I'm really not sure what's going on here. Like, I don't – what difference does it make, I guess, of him doing what he's doing? I understand he's not certified, but if he were, would it make a difference, really, at this point?
Probably not, because, to your point, every team in the league, every GM in the league knows exactly what's going on with Lamar Jackson. And I don't know if there's any amount of coercing that anyone could do, whether it's a certified agent or whether it's Ken Francis, per Tom Pelissero, a Florida man who most recently was pitching a home
Florida
fitness
man.
Intervention. Yeah. It's always the Florida
the
man.
The Florida man. You got to wonder. When it says that, then you got to wonder.
It's always the Florida man.
I went to high school in Florida. I can say that. I lived in Florida. But when you say a Florida man, start laughing.
That's all you need to know is he's
there's
a Florida man.
There's some crazy
man.
Stuff that goes on down there.
I don't know if there's any amount of coercing that a Florida man pitching a fitness invention is going to do to an NFL GM that makes them think, oh, you know what? We actually do want to fully guarantee Lamar Jackson $230 million. I forgot, but, you know, good going on reminding me.
Well, it's gotten, you know, muddy. You know, there's tweets that Tom Pelissero put out, and then Lamar, you know, commented on a tweet saying, stop lying. That man never tried to negotiate for me. And then, you know, Lamar tweets out something else because now, you know, come to find out, Ken Francis is a business partner of Lamar Jackson. And they put out this tweet, which said, Lamar put it out, my business partner Ken and I will be dropping some type of gym thing this summer, so stay tuned. So, you know, it does muddy the water a bit because in a situation as important of a situation and as serious as a situation this is, you don't want to have, you know, someone that doesn't, you know contracts. He doesn't have to be a NFL agent, but if you don't know sport contracts and all this other stuff, why is he calling teams on your behalf? If it is happening, I don't know if it's happened. It's speculations that he has been calling teams. Lamar said it didn't happen.
I think for the NFLPA to put out a statement.
Well, the NFL has to put that out. If it comes out that, you know, if anybody says anything about it and it hits, like Tom Pelissero, he didn't say who gave him the information that this guy has been reaching out. But if it does, when it does come out from a reputable source, the NFL then has to come and say, hey, listen, this is what the deal is. He is not, he does not have the ability to negotiate contracts. He is not certified by the NFLPA to negotiate contracts for any player, let alone Lamar Jackson. So if this is indeed happening, please let us know, or don't speak to him at all. So the NFL has to put out that memo to protect their players, period. But yeah, if this did happen, man, you're just muddying the waters even more, because you can't try to back channel the NFL. You can't try to back channel. Well, hey, go ask that team over there what they think about. Well, that team is going to put it out there through a Palacero or anybody else.
Yeah, they have ways of doing
exactly. They're going to put it out there if indeed it happens.
This
so,
isn't like wing womaning.
Exactly.
Like one of your buddies to get it's a cute guy to go on a date with you.
Go talk to that girl or that guy for me and let him
know.
This
is the NFL.
Yeah, you're just muddying the waters even more. I have no problem with Lamar not having an agent. Why? Because if we are to believe the, you know, what's out there, there's a contract that is out there for him that the Ravens are willing to give him, guaranteed. 3 years, you know, at 40 plus a clip for 3 years, guaranteed. It's on the table. It's there if we are to believe what is being said. So he doesn't need an agent for that. That's still there.
Yeah.
Now, if you want more money or talk to other teams, either he needs to be, and I'm not saying he's not, where he is, because I'm not in his camp. I don't follow Lamar around, and I don't know what he knows. But if you're not going to have an agent, you need to be well-versed in each team that is going to potentially – well, hell, you need to be versed on all 32, and that's including yours, in regards to their needs, their wants, how – you know, their salary cap, this and that and that and this. You got to be well-versed like agents are, you know. So when you go into a situation like this, you're well versed, you're well educated, you understand what they're saying, they understand what you're saying, you can get on the same page. That's where the agent helps out, because they understand, they've been doing this for a very long time. Again, there's a contract on the table for you, guaranteed. You can take it. You don't need an agent for that. If we are to believe what's out there, what is it, $130-something million guaranteed for 3 years, somewhere around there, that last came out and Lamar sent a tweet and I turned down, you know, $130-something million guaranteed, and he sort of a laughing emoji. But if that is indeed out there, then, yeah, you don't need an agent for that, you know. But if you want more, if you believe you are deserved more, and you probably are, more than likely, yeah, get as much as you can. You're going to be able to, you have to be able to negotiate that. It's not just, I want guaranteed money, you give it to me, that's it. No, you got to know all the particulars within that contract. Yeah, you can give it to the NFLPA, they'll read through it or whatnot. But as you're doing it yourself, and not to say, again, not to say that Lamar is not doing this. As you're doing this yourself, you have to be able to not only train, because you're going to be you're an NFL quarterback, so you got to put in the time training, and then you got to put it. So when are you getting sleep? You know, when are you resting? Because while you're out working out and doing your thing, the agent is negotiating. Well, now while you're out doing your thing, nobody's negotiating. Now you got to come back and negotiate. So when are you resting?
Well, and to the point about the agent, mm-hmm. You're right. The offer is on the table because Lamar's talent and his value to the Baltimore Ravens franchise, that's what got him that offer on the table. Mm-hmm. I think that the pro-agent people look at it like, would we even be in this position if Lamar Jackson did have an agent? Because there have been offers made from the Baltimore Ravens that Lamar Jackson turned down. And I don't blame Lamar. He really did look like a genius when he decided to turn down some of those offers, because he wanted to test himself against the market. He was like, nope, I want the quarterback market to elevate and keep pushing that cap up, and then I'll have my payday after Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and all those other quarterbacks get paid, because I'll get paid and my ceiling will go even further up. But I do wonder, how would things be differently if he did have an agent negotiating things for him? Would he be in this position with a non-exclusive franchise tag if he had an agent advising him, doing kind of the dirty work with the team and making those negotiations? I lean probably not. It's easy to say that since there's no way to prove that. But I would say we probably wouldn't be in this position. Lamar wouldn't be in this position if he had somebody negotiating on his behalf. But to your point, the money's on the table.
If I'm Lamar right now, the money's that one, whatever it is, let's just say it's 130 over 3 years. How much is that? For a little bit over 40 per year,
somewhere around there.
Yeah. I am then saying, okay, if you, whatever you get over this 130 or 140, whatever you get over this, you can have 3 to 4% of that. You're not getting any of this 3 years, 130, because I can just say, you know what? Fine. No, thank you. Let me take it. Come on, Baltimore. Let me sign this. It's all mine. Let's go. I don't need an agent. So if you can get me over what I have already gotten myself, you get 3 or 4% of that. That's how I think you bring the agent in. And some agents may say, nope. Don't want to do it. But then some agents, they say, okay, come on.
Interesting proposal.
Yeah, like, come on, I take it. You know, I take it from here.
But the biggest problem is, as we've been talking about, other teams know the position they're in. They could put all the work that they want into it and get him to sign. And this agent can wow them with everything. They can put the offer out there. He signs the offer sheet. Ravens match it.
But then the agent still get the money he got over for him.
The agent does. But to make this happen, he's got to get the other teams interested enough to put that offer out there and feel like there's hope. When, at the end of the day, how much hope are they really feeling?
If there's a Florida man calling, I don't know how much hope there really truly is.
Florida man.
Florida man. T's and P's to the Florida man. We've got four March Madness games tonight. The Sweet 16 will wrap up tonight. Let's go ahead and pick those games coming up next. Caroline Willie D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We've got four Sweet 16 games. We picked the games yesterday. I think that I have all the games that we picked since the SEC tournament, throughout the entire NCAA tournament, all the games we've picked. I'm pretty sure I've gotten every single one of them wrong. And the one that I've gotten right was yesterday when I picked Kansas State, and I only did that just to stir the pot with D-Mace. So I am picking all of my games tonight, not with any sort of analytical breakdown, not with any sort of knowledge about the teams, because everyone I've done that with, I've gotten wrong. So I'm doing it simply based off of gut feeling and simply based off of trying to stir the pot, because that was the one time that it did me any sort of favors. So without further ado, let's pick some of these games. Nick Kieser, take it away.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, round two, so hopefully we do better tonight, Caroline. Well,
yep. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Game one, Alabama versus San Diego State. Alabama, 7.5-point favorite.
I'm taking the Crimson Tide. Alabama is so freaking good. They've looked all good tournament. They've looked good all tournament long. They've looked good pretty much all season long. It's going to be hard to beat that team. Give me Alabama.
Well, I got Alabama in the winning the national championship, so give me Alabama.
Alabama is awfully good. So here's a little bit about San Diego State. They have the sixth best defense in KenPom. Really good, efficient defense. It's more efficient than their offense, but can they guard Alabama? Can they guard Alabama?
And that's the question.
Alabama's no slouch on defense, and San Diego State, not a great offensive team. And, of course, what league does San Diego State play in? The Mountain West that I was all over. They got four teams in. I don't know how. They didn't do very well except for San Diego State. So I believe the Aztecs will be exposed tonight by Alabama. I'll take it.
All right. Alabama. Well, I think that's a pretty fair pick. Up next, Miami will take on Houston. And the Cougars are a 7.5-point favorite.
I think Miami is the most talented team in the ACC. I think they have more dudes than even Duke, right? They can, at their best, look really good. That being said, man,
Houston has got the dudes. Houston has got unbelievable. They come at you. I mean, they're all over you when you get the ball. I mean, they are smothering, and they play at a real high tempo. I think Houston's the one team I picked to go to the Final Four that's still in it. So I think I got to pick them, right?
Right,
I
got to go with
you. Got to pick them.
Yeah.
I'm going with Houston. I would love to see that matchup of Houston and Alabama, even though I picked Alabama and Kansas to be in the championship game. But a Houston and Alabama matchup would be great.
So I said earlier, I think that we're going to come out of the Sweet 16 with one of the one seeds going down. This has not been a very kind tournament to the one seeds. And that's really based off of nothing other than just, I think that'd be fun. I think that that would be fun to see, you know, a one seed go down, especially a team like Houston that has been so good all season long. Really, to your point, they have the dudes. But Miami's got their fair share of dudes, too. I think that Miami has been, like, silently cruising under the radar of college basketball, that we haven't really given Miami a whole lot of looks. They've just been silently behind the scenes, been grinding and winning games. I'll take Miami with the upset. I'll take Miami to beat the Cougs.
There we go.
Well, yeah, and you want a one seed to go down tonight, apparently. So that might be the one team that we see get taken down.
I picked Alabama to win, so it's got to be Houston.
Okay. Well, our next pick is Princeton versus Creighton. And Creighton is actually a 10-point favorite tonight.
D-Mace, you go first.
Ooh. I'm going to go with the story of Princeton. Give me Princeton, even though they're a 10-point dog. Give me the underdogs in this one. I want to see Princeton and FAU in a championship game. No.
The NCAA would be buying up all the ramen because they're losing a bunch of money if it's Princeton, FAU in the final.
Tough matchup. I would love to see. I think with my heart, I'm going to take the points in Princeton because I'm rooting for them. It would be a lot of fun to see them win another one. But I think the days to prepare for what Princeton throws at you, that will help Creighton, right? For ever since they saw that draw open up, they'd be like, okay, get my assistance. Let's start working on what Princeton throws at you. The back cuts, it's similar to what Princeton did with Pete Carril 30 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. Back cuts, spacing. If you're ready for it, if you're prepared for it, it's almost like preparing for the option in football when you play Navy or Army. Like, you better be ready or they'll make you look bad, right? If you're not prepared, it doesn't matter how much more talented you are. You get exploited. But I think Creighton is a well-coached team with time to prepare. I think that makes it tougher on Princeton. So I'll take the points, but I think Creighton wins.
It's called March Madness for a lot of teams, but for some teams it's March Magic. And that's exactly what Princeton has been experiencing so far in the tournament, has been just total March Magic. But I do think sometimes with these Cinderellas, the 14, 15, 16 seeds that make their way into the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, like we saw with St. Peter's last year, a 15 seed getting into the Elite Eight, at some point the magic just runs out. Creighton is a really good team, and Princeton has been balling. I mean, they made Missouri look silly in the last round, but I'm going to take Creighton to win. I think at some point the magic is going to run out for Princeton. I think they keep it closer than 10 points, so I'd take Princeton plus 10, but I ultimately think Creighton advances.
All right, in our final game of the night that I have listed, Xavier versus Texas. The Longhorns are a 4-point favorite in tonight's matchup.
I don't know anything about either of these teams. I'm going to be real honest with everybody. Texas is a good team. I do know that. So my analytical breakdown of this, my expert opinion is I think Texas wins, and I don't know why.
Well, I had... Hell, I had Xavier out by now. I think I had Texas out by now, but I had Texas going a little bit further than Xavier. So I say all of that to say this, I'm picking Xavier.
All right.
I think Xavier's a really good team. Sean Miller back there. He's been through the battles, second tour of duty with the Musketeers. They will not be intimidated at all by Texas. What did you say the line was, Nick?
The line is 4 points currently on Superbook.
Texas by 4. Whew. I'll tell you what. I'll take the points and Xavier. Texas is really good. Dylan Dessou led the SEC in rebounding when he played for the Vanderbilt Commodores. Hurt his knee, transferred to Texas. He's had a really good tournament so far. He had a huge second-round game. So he's playing well. Also, watch Jabari Rice. Sir Jabari Rice, number 10 for Texas. I don't know how to pronounce this. Sir Jabari, I don't know how to say his first name.
I thought you meant like he was knighted.
When you watch number 10, Rice, best shot fake in America. Don't take the fake. Don't take the fake. You're going to take the fake. He will make you take the fake. It's unbelievable. Watch him. He's really, really good. But I like Xavier in the points. I like the coaching matchup for Xavier. I'll take the Musketeers plus the 4.5.
All right. Well, everybody enjoy the March Madness action tonight. We've got Florida Atlantic, Kansas State, UConn, Gonzaga on Saturday as the Elite Eight tips off on Saturday. That is going to do it for us today. Predators in action tomorrow at 1 o'clock. We'll have your pregame coverage starting at noon on 102.5 The Game. Stillman & Company is up next.
Hey, I want to say happy birthday to my baby, Bailey. She's 24 years old today.
Happy birthday, Bailey.
Happy golden year for my baby girl, Bailey. Peace.
Have a great day, guys. Enjoy the sunshine.